What is up, Vermont Edition podcast listener? This is Elodie Reed, digital producer for VPR. Just to let you know, this podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. In early July, Vermont's Agency of Education released a 25-page document for schools to guide them in figuring out plans for the start of the new school year. While AOE said returning to in-person learning should be a priority, exactly how to do that and in what capacity was left up to individual districts. On July 23rd, the agency released another document, just one page this time, clarifying the decision-making process for districts. But by then, many had already not just come up with their plans for the fall, but some had released them to families. Families, many of whom have been scrambling with a lack of in-person learning and childcare for more than 4 months now, are trying to figure out how to meet their families' needs moving forward as they absorb the announcement of what their district is planning. I think it's safe to say that many families and many districts feel like they're in an impossible situation, with only about 4 weeks to go before the fall semester is supposed to start. So today on Vermont Edition, we're going to talk about reopening plans. By the way, we are planning to host another discussion that centers the voices of teachers. So if you have suggestions for that show or want to volunteer yourself as a teacher, you can send us a note right to vermontedition@vpr.org. For today, though, we're going to get an overview of what districts are planning for and how confident they are moving forward. Joining us throughout the hour will be school superintendents and a teacher, and we're also joined for the full hour by Vermont Secretary of Education Dan French, who we'll start with. Secretary French, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Good afternoon.
Can you explain, first of all, why the Agency of Education didn't come up with a statewide plan for the reopening of schools in the fall?
In terms of a comprehensive plan, I didn't think it was feasible. Like so many of the other ways we've approached this emergency, we wanted to put emphasis on the public health information. So to the extent the state published a statewide plan, we did in terms of the health guidance. And I think, in many states, we tried to strike that compromise between focusing our guidance on the health information while also having it be informed to a certain extent about the practical ways in which Vermont schools are configured. So our guidance, the cornerstone of our guidance is the health guidance, and that's we expect that to remain fairly consistent, albeit, as new public health information emerges, I would expect that guidance to evolve as well. But then subsequently, we address the issue of hybrid learning, which we're calling to characterize sort of that balance, if you will, between in-person and remote learning. Like so many of the other aspects of this emergency, we never really anticipated pandemic in our regulations. So we went through our regulations, particularly as they pertain to attendance, to answer the question to what extent is hybrid learning permissible in Vermont, because we saw it as a pattern emerging in other states as well. And we're basically able to answer that question. It is permissible. But the hows of that and what it starts to look like varies. As you know, we have a very diverse landscape in terms of our educational delivery system. So taken together, our guidance sort of, I think, on the one hand, provides very consistent and state-level directive guidance on the health precautions that must be implemented for in-person instruction. But on the other hand, it gives districts some flexibility to implement the instruction, because we think that flexibility will be necessary. For instance, not all our schools have sufficient computers to do remote learning. So we have to make that compromise. And I think that's part of the tension we're seeing now, is districts really having to roll up their sleeves and deal with these very, very complex issues.
But given that you say you came out with a consistent set of guidelines based on health, and then districts could figure out what they were able to accommodate within that, districts have come up with very different plans that aren't based on caseloads in the county, or not even necessarily the size of the school, and not always based on the needs of families in their district. Now, certainly, they are based on what the district thinks it can accommodate, and some districts have assessed what families want, but certainly not all of them. And all districts are trying to operate in the best interests of the students and families they serve, as well as their staff and faculty. Nonetheless, there are very, very different plans. And if you are a family living in one town and you look at the district next to yours and your town is doing all remote and the next town over, the next district over, is doing 5 days in person, you know, based on the same health guidelines, that doesn't necessarily seem like a consistent approach. How is the agency guaranteeing equity and safety and educational parity for all Vermont students under this plan?
Yeah, I mean, those are great questions. I would push back to suggest that in the case of in-person instruction, which is where the health guidance is directed, that should be very consistently implemented across the state.
But I mean, some districts are doing 5 days in person, some days are doing no days
right.
in person.
So, yes, I would just say to the point when in-person is being implemented, that's where the very directive health guidance comes into play.
Right.
But in terms of, you're right, I mean, this variability we're seeing across the state isn't necessarily based on a reaction to the health conditions, which are fairly consistent across the state. But each district has different facilities, you know, just all the inputs that go into education. But I think, you know, more importantly now, you just layer this whole sort of layer of community interaction, staff interaction around the anxiety and apprehension. Those are very real issues as much as logistic issues. So, you know, on the one hand, you can make the observation that the state would have been able to navigate these complex issues at the local level, but I'm not confident we would, especially, you know, based on my experience working statewide. There's an incredible diversity in our communities to begin with, but then this add on this layer of fear and apprehension and anxiety.
That's Dan French. We're going to get him back here. Technology in Vermont, as we all know, certainly an issue. It's one that we're going to discuss today as we look at what happens with Vermont schools, because remote learning is certainly a problem for many people who don't have consistent internet access, which may be the issue here with Dan French and our app. While we try to get Secretary French back, let's talk with one of our superintendents today who is joining us to talk about the plans in her district. Elaine Pinckney is superintendent of the Champlain Valley School District, which encompasses the towns of Charlotte, Hinesburg, Shelburne, Williston, and St. George. Lane Pinckney, nice to talk with you. Thanks for joining us.
Sure, thanks.
So what is your district planning in terms of this question of all in-person hybrid learning, where students are in school in the building for a couple days a week versus totally remote? Can you just very briefly describe what the Champlain Valley School District is doing?
So we are doing fully hybrid K through 12, and what that looks like is two full days of in-school traditional learning, or let's say learning as we've known it in the past, and 2 days of at-home learning, and we are, then the third day at the high school will be fully direct learning online in preparation for remote. At the elementary level, that will be more callbacks for interventions, for teacher planning, for professional development. But that is what we're doing across the system. And we are at this point working really hard to figure out like how we can best structure the remote days, the days when our students are learning from home, so that it isn't what it was last spring. I mean, our goal is to make sure that the learning that happens on those 2 days is rigorous, is as engaged, and will be, like, you know, significantly better than what we experienced in the spring.
And I should point out that the Champlain Valley School District is among 16 districts that have come together to offer the same hybrid plan. So there are districts in Franklin, Chittenden, and Addison County. How did coordinating with other districts across these three counties help, and in what way?
Well, I would say that, and this is true at every level, so it's true at the regional level for the superintendents, but this is true at the state level, it's true at our local level, it's true at the local school building level. I would say that the day after schooling ended in June, we started focusing on what's it going to look like when we open in August or September. And so I think the way it helped was that we had initially daily meetings with the regional superintendents, and then biweekly meetings. We had one retreat day, every one of those meetings, and that retreat day focused on what are we going to be doing in the fall. And so I think there were like 14 or 15 of us. Like, people would come to those meetings having read an article, had a conversation with their own leadership team, having, you know, gotten some survey results from their families. And so that was all part of the conversation. So by the time, you know, in mid-July, when we came to that decision, it was based on a lot of discussion and a lot of pushbacks. And we didn't, we didn't end up where we started out. So I think that, like, the value of it is, I think every single one of us would say, we know that the world does not 100% agree with the decision we're making, but we're solid in where we are in our decision.
But did doing that with other districts help you feel more solid?
Yes, I think it did, because we were able to push back on each other on, you know, like when people would bring things up. I mean, like I said, we didn't start off saying, oh, let's figure out how we're going to do hybrid in the fall. Actually, we started off trying to think, how could we bring all the kids back? Here are the safety guidelines. How can we bring all of the kids back? And we really, for the longest time, for weeks, were working on that premise. And it just, there was no way that we could figure out how to bring back all the students when you consider, like, do you have, first of all, the space to do that? Do you have the staffing to do that? Can you ensure the physical social distancing guidelines? There were so many things that we came up against. So I think that, like, yes, there is kind of a piece around, if you're doing it collectively, it gives you courage to do it. But there's also the piece around, when you do it collectively, you don't forget any pieces. So, you are making sure that you're thinking about all of the pieces, because somebody in that group has thought about the thing that you have not thought about.
Well, so you mentioned staffing, and, you know, we're hearing that a lot of teachers aren't comfortable returning to the classroom at all. There are requests for leave. Are you confident that you and the other superintendents in these districts have the staffing to accommodate even a hybrid learning plan?
I am hopeful. I mean, because part of the decision to go hybrid is that we can ensure social distancing, mask wearing, and a lot of space for kids to, you know, move around and not be contained in a single space for the entire school day.
So, but hopeful and confident are obviously, you know, chosen words.
Right. So here's the thing. We're going to be putting out a survey this week asking our teachers, now that we know what the model is, and here's what it's going to look like for you, can you let us know if you feel confident returning back? What is your choice? Because we're also, you know, we could split the teachers up by those who do the in-school instruction and those who do the out-of-school instruction. And there's a third model, right? We have some families, and I know they exist everywhere in the state, who don't want to send their kids back to school regardless. So we are also developing a fully remote model that we believe will be like a CBSD homeschooling model. So we will stay connected with the families. We'll provide them with the work. They'll be connected with us. That might be an opportunity for some teachers who would prefer not to be in the school at all. But we're trying to figure that out. And honestly, just late last week, a group of teachers in one of our schools came up with a couple models that really would go a long way towards making sure that the 2 days that students are home, that they're really getting rigorous, engaged learning with their teachers, and would provide us the opportunity to say, well, maybe half of our teachers can be remote and half of them in school. And maybe there are half the teachers who are really feeling comfortable and confident that we have been really strict with the health and safety guidelines, so it will be safe to come back.
Still,
so I say I'm hopeful because I don't know, but I know that we're doing everything we can at our end to make sure that our teachers are safe. I hope that they know that we care about that. We care about teacher and staff safety just as much as we care about our student safety. And we hope that we made the decision collectively to ensure that safety for everyone.
Well, still so many unanswered questions and so much planning going into even getting to this point. Elaine Pinkney, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us and share a little bit about what Champlain Valley is doing.
Thanks.
Elaine Pinckney is the superintendent of Champlain Valley School District, encompassing the towns of Shalott, Hinesburg, Shelburne, Williston, and St. George. And we're talking about back-to-school plans and seeing what's happening around the state, getting a sense of some of the different plans that districts have been coming up with and how confident they are that they can make it work with, as we heard from Elaine Pinckney, who says she's hopeful that she'll have the staffing to accommodate this hybrid plan that the district has come up with, but that's not the same as confidence. Dan French is also with us this hour. He's the Secretary of Education. And you heard Superintendent Pinckney talk about a hope that there's enough staffing, but not necessarily a confidence. Is that something that you're hearing from other districts around the state, Secretary French?
Yeah, I think that's a very fair assessment of where folks are at. I mean, I think Superintendent Pinckney described a fairly well-articulated plan. I think other districts are still at the early phases of that planning. That should solidify here in the next week or so. But I think, you know, that essential question is one that has to be raised, you know, in spite of our planning, to what extent it's top-down or organic from the district level. The operation of school districts is highly dependent on a series of fairly fragile logistics, if you will, including our most vulnerable one in the staff. So these considerations will vary considerably from district to district, and there's ones that we're going to have to assess as districts get clear about their plans.
Yeah. How are you trying to keep track of what districts are doing? We reached out to the agency this morning because, you know, obviously we're trying also to figure out what is happening across all these districts. And we were told that you intend to collect this information on a monthly basis starting in the fall. But so it doesn't sound like you have a sense yet, because districts are in different stages of planning, even what the full picture of the landscape is for education.
Yeah, we decided fairly early, due to the complexity of this work, that we didn't have a lot of capacity at the local level also to simultaneously design this and then also comply with a state directive or model. So we intentionally sort of said, I'm not going to require a submission of these planning documents. I am keenly interested in the data and the patterns that emerge. So basically, that what's happening now is that I'm in, if not daily, if not hourly, contact with superintendents about their intentions and providing, you know, feedback on that. We're also on a weekly call with superintendents. That's been continuous since the beginning of the emergency, more or less. So we are supporting districts locally with doing that, but felt that the larger effort now, particularly as we turn into August, needs to be spent on actually articulating those plans.
Do you have a sense yet of how many families have indicated that they will be withdrawing their children from Vermont's public education, either in favor of homeschool or another option like an independent school?
We don't. I would say overall, I can give you some information on homeschooling. We had, I think our data showed last year this time around the 15th of July, we had approximately 900 homeschool applications. And this year, that number is closer to 1,700. So there's been a significant increase in the number of homeschooling applications. I will say that trend was starting before we published the hybrid guidance. So I'm sure a lot of parents at that point were trying to make the choice between in-person instruction versus homeschooling. So now with that other option on the table, if you heard Superintendent Pinckney describe districts with hybrid option in their toolkit will basically have additional offerings in terms of navigating parental interest and staff availability.
If families decide not to take a remote option from their school district and leave the public education system altogether in favor of homeschooling, what is going to happen to the finances of the schools they're withdrawing from?
Yeah, I mean, homeschooling doesn't count towards, you know, the local pupil count for a school district per se, but, you know, it's a viable option for some parents, and it's, you know, been in our regulations for a number of years. And, you know, once again, like so many of our regulations, they never anticipated a pandemic, but there are financial implications. But, you know, the priority right now, to echo Superintendent Pinckney, is, you know, we're designing systems with a sense of uncertainty to a certain extent, but we know firstly that Vermont has achieved a high degree of suppression of the virus in the state. So, I mean, that fact alone allows us to even contemplate returning students to in-person instruction.
But I mean, specific to the finances of schools, like is the agency thinking of a way to bridge the funds for a year, assuming that some of these families will come back to public school when it's safe for them to do so or when full-time school is available? I mean, is there any way to not have this, you know, sort of bouncing back and forth and upheaval across the state financially?
Yeah, certainly the financial context is critical, but where I was going with my statement was that, you know, the priority right now needs to be on designing a system around meeting the needs of every student as if this emergency had never occurred. And that in itself is a tremendous task.
Sure.
There's clearly significant financial implications for this emergency on the state's economic condition, including education finance. And all said and done, I don't know if homeschooling is going to be that significant of a financial piece when you consider the significant deficit we have in the ed fund and so forth. But I mean, you know, those are things we think about all the time, the financial elements. But honestly, this conversation gets simplified pretty quickly when we just think about opening school in a safe way for our kids and our staff. And that's where the priority is now. You know, when you're in the middle of an emergency, you focus on that first, and we'll worry about the finances second.
Zoe wrote in to say, Burlington is planning a hybrid model. Most of the parents I know are in panic mode, scrambling to come up with their own plans for the home days. But how can we even make plans when so much is up in the air? Kathleen writes, I'm concerned because I assume Kathleen means either their school district or the state, have made no mention of special education and how it will or won't work within the schedule. I don't know how it will be possible for special educators to support students at home and in classrooms at the same time. I'm concerned that I've been asking our superintendent and head of student support services these questions and more for weeks and have had just a few vague answers. Mary writes in to say, I'm seeing parents on Facebook looking for other families to join forces to handle the 3 days a week that kids aren't in school. Lots of potential for creativity and community building to fill the gap. But isn't it kind of defeating the function of keeping classrooms small if the other days kids are going to care in other locations with other kids from other classrooms and schools? Won't kids, teachers, and staff now have even more exposure? And Carrie says, all meetings about school opening are currently through Google or Zoom. If it isn't safe to meet about it, can we all stop playing political games with people's lives? And Kathy says, the problem with hybrid models is the kids may still be asymptomatic on their in-school days. Let's go to Ryan, who's calling in from Plainfield. Hi, Ryan.
Hi. Well, I'm a school teacher at a small school in Plainfield. This summer, when I wasn't working, I got had a sore throat on a Monday. I called my primary care. They recommended I get a test. Took till Saturday to get the results. And reading through the 25-page health recommendations that the department put out, I'm just curious of how the department's recommending schools deal with kids and faculty who come in with one symptom and what.
Ryan, your line is going in and out, but I think what you're saying is, you know, you're explaining your own situation with having a cold and having to go in and get a test, and that the test, you know, it can take a long time for that test to come back. So what is the plan for if children or teachers show symptoms, leave, come back, maybe still have a cough? How is that going to work? Let's actually put that to one of the supervisors or superintendents, rather, who's joining us on today's show. Beverly Davis is superintendent of Orleans Central Supervisory Union, covering the towns of Albany, Barton, Brownington, Glover, Irisburg, Orleans, and Westmore. Bev Davis, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So how do you respond to Ryan, who's a teacher in a school district, saying, what is the plan for when kids are sick or have a sniffle? Because it is so much stricter right now, with good reason, for anybody who's showing any symptoms that could be COVID-19.
Exactly. So we have our school nurse team working. They'll be working on figuring out the protocols for them. We're going to rely on their professional judgment. Anybody showing symptoms will be sent home, and then we'll put things in place about what needs to happen before they return. But we're definitely concerned about that.
Yeah, I mean, that must also mean upheaval potentially for faculties, you know, students, staff, teachers. I mean, if a teacher is home, maybe they can teach remotely, but do you have somebody else who can come in and take their place for those in-school days? I mean, how would that even work?
Right. That's definitely, staffing is definitely a big concern of ours.
Well, tell us a little bit about what is happening with the plan for Orleans Central Supervisory Union.
So we have our plan is that our K through 8 students will be in school 5 days a week. Our high school students will be half the students in 2 days, half the students another 2 days, and all the students will be remote on Wednesdays. We have offered a full remote option for families to choose from. We sent out a survey and we asked families to choose either 5 days fully in school, 5 days fully remote, and of course they have the option to do homeschool. We have about three quarters of our families responded, and we have about 77% of students coming in person, and the rest divided between remote and choosing home study. We have about 100 K through 8 students who have chosen fully remote. And we're planning on staffing that with teachers who only teach remotely. Our high school has about 20 students who chose remote, and they will be remoting into their classes that are happening in the building on the days that they're in the building.
Mm. My understanding, too, about the plan is that once a student or a family commits to remote, they can't really switch in the middle of the year unless there are kind of extreme circumstances, right?
So, you know, we're trying to get a commitment from people, but we do know that we'll absolutely be flexible. We'll work for people, with people, to make it work for their families. We expect, you know, there may be some children who start in person and need to switch and vice versa, and we're willing to work with that. What we are cautioning families is, you know, if 50 kids who chose in person all of a sudden decide to be remote, we can't make that happen overnight because we have to be able to staff it. So we'll certainly work with our families and, you know, always wanting to do what's best for the students and, of course, our staff as well.
You know, we heard from Elaine Pinkney, who said she hopes that she has the staffing to do the district's plan. What about your staffing? Because you've got lots of different pieces there.
So staffing is a concern for sure. We had hoped by offering a fully remote option that maybe some of our teachers would choose that as a good option for to solve maybe some of the issues they're trying to juggle within their own families. We don't have very many teachers at this point who've chosen that. So we'll just continue to work. And, you know, as Elaine Pinkney said, we're hoping we have the staff. We don't know yet. Some of it is districts are just now starting to release their plans. And so now teachers, just as, you know, other parents, are scrambling to figure out what they're going to do with their own children. So we'll see how that plays out.
Well, you know, a lot of teachers say their voices weren't incorporated into the decision-making process in an adequate way, that they were not involved enough in the process. And these are the people who are going to have to teach the children and, as you mentioned, who are in many cases also parenting children who may not be in the same school where they work, or even if they are, you know, if it's a hybrid model for some schools, you know, if you're supposed to be in school 4 days, but your children are home three, you know, how do you make that work? So is it a fair critique that teachers, do you think, have not been adequately incorporated into the decision-making process?
So the way we have incorporated teachers up until this point is we did put out surveys. We've certainly had lots and lots of emails, people reaching out with suggestions, with questions, with phone calls, et cetera. We've had our teacher association president has been present at all of the meetings. I've had almost daily phone calls with her since March to make sure that teachers' voices are heard. We have teachers on all parts of the spectrum here, people who just want to come back. They don't really have concerns about safety, all the way to people who have grave concerns about safety and everything in between. So we felt like there were some decisions that we had to make based on the health and safety guidance, and we had to figure that out first. Now that we're getting into more finer details, we're including more teachers. As we talked about teaching and learning, we had a group of teacher leaders made up from a representative from each of our schools participate in the those conversations. Tomorrow we have a meeting with all of our art, music, phys ed teachers, other people who are shared among our smaller schools to hear their concerns and to work with them on their schedules. And then as planning shifts to the building level, building principals are calling teachers in to start thinking about all those nitty-gritty things about, you know, the things that that have to be figured out because each building is different. You know, for example, some buildings, every single classroom has an outside entrance. In other buildings, that's not the case. That's really building specific. How are we going to keep everybody safe in those different situations? So we're just getting to that step now where more teachers will be able to participate.
Well, thanks for telling us a little bit about what your plans are. Again, you know, so much up in the air, but I appreciate hearing what you're thinking and planning, at least for the first few weeks of school. Thanks, Bev.
Thank you.
Beverly Davis is superintendent of Orleans Central Supervisory Union, covering the towns of Albany, Barton, Brownington, Glover, Irisburg, Orleans, and Westmore. And let's talk for a few minutes now about teacher involvement, as we've been discussing. Chris Gouros is a middle school special educator at Main Street Middle School in the Montpelier-Roxbury School District, which includes the towns of Montpelier and Roxbury, downtown Montpelier, and the town of Roxbury. Hi, Chris. Nice to talk with you.
Hi. Happy to be here.
Do you think teachers have been adequately involved?
Well, I can speak for my own local district. I think there's been great involvement from teachers for the past 4 weeks. We've been having a weekly meeting with the whole district, and that has been in person, you know, spaced out in the gym. And there's also representatives there for paraprofessionals and our clerical and custodial staff. And at those meetings, the admin kind of floats some things they've talked about, and we give feedback, bring questions, concerns. In addition to that, each building has its own team of teacher leaders that have done things like walk around and look at the spaces and help decide which rooms we can use for instruction, because there's some spaces that had to be moved around. And we're doing a lot of problem solving in those building teams. So in my particular district, it seems okay. We're trying to broaden that and get more feedback through like town meetings and things like that right now. Statewide, I would say I would have liked to see more teacher involvement and just kind of overall plans, just because, you know, the folks doing the work can definitely point out some of the questions or concerns that might arise as we get to the building level.
And, you know, do you think there should have been a statewide plan, or do you appreciate this continuation of the priority of local control that Vermont has had for so many years around schooling?
You know, local control is important, and there's districts who certainly need some flexibility to make their own plans. That said, I think at least a set of guidance that teachers had a hand in, teachers and paraprofessionals, custodians had a hand in developing, would have maybe helped some avoid some of the pieces that are coming up now around childcare and that kind of thing. So I'm not sure it needed to be set, definitely do this, but I think more guidance, I feel like, would have been helpful at this time, because I'm increasingly concerned as we get closer to the projected start of the school year that there's just a lot of unanswered questions.
You know, how would you respond to that listener, Kathleen, who wrote in to say they're concerned about special education and how to make it work with the classrooms and for students, you know, who are in school, but also some who are remote and needing special educators to be working with them all the time? This is your focus. So, you know, how do you address that need and that really complicated piece of the puzzle?
It's a huge piece of the puzzle, and I worry about it all the time. Thinking back to the spring, I had some students I was able to work fairly effectively with remotely, and others that I maybe met with once or twice, so then had trouble getting them to log on. So then when we think about this year, a lot of districts, including mine, are working on a pod model where we're trying to really mitigate risk by limiting the number of students and staff that each student comes into contact with. So there's huge questions there about what can I do in terms of pulling a group together? Will I just be working one-on-one, or will I be remote? And I think we're waiting more guidance from the state around that kind of thing, I believe. So I am worried about it. And then throw into that the fact that typically with a lot of my students, I'm right there next to them under normal times. But now 6 feet away with a mask on is what's safest, and I can't do a lot of the work in the same way with students. I know my district has ordered me like a large plexiglass screen. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at potentially being behind that from 6 feet away, and that'll be a big change.
Boy, yeah. Well, Chris, thank you for telling us a little bit about, you know, what the plans are and your concerns. I appreciate hearing from you and wish you luck this semester.
Thank you.
Chris Gouros is a special educator at Main Street Middle School in the Montpelier-Roxbury School District. Today we're looking at some of the plans Vermont school districts have put in place and how confident they are in those plans for fall learning. We're hoping to have a teacher roundtable in the next couple of weeks. So teachers, if you'd like to share with us what you think we should focus on in that show or raise your hand to volunteer to be a guest, you can let us know by sending an email to vermontedition@vpr.org. Secretary of Education Dan French is with us all hour, and we've been talking with superintendents and teachers as well. Laura writes in, those of us who work in schools could not get substitutes before the pandemic. I've heard from several retired teacher friends they will not be substituting any longer. An already small pool has dwindled. Secretary French, we've also heard from pretty much everyone we've talked to today that they're not sure they have adequate staffing for the plans they've put in place. Is there a possibility that some schools won't be able to open at all for in-person learning or with the plans they've devised at the end of August, beginning of September?
Well, I think it does point to how fragile, you know, in spite of how elaborate these plans might be, how fragile they are based on, you know, these bottom line logistics like the availability of staff. You know, prior to the pandemic, when I drive around Vermont, I'd consistently see the same sign on the lawn of every Vermont school, and that was bus drivers needed, you know. So we have labor shortages. We had them before COVID-19, and this is only going to become more challenging. I think, once again, this is why districts need to, you know, have the flexibility to prepare for hybrid, remote, in-person, and to work closely with their staff, as we've heard, and I think of all the superintendents talking today, how closely they're working with all their stakeholders to develop these plans, but also figure out the practical elements of implementing them.
Boy, you know, I mean, school bus drivers, there are questions about that too, because parents are encouraged to drive their children to school to avoid having too many children on the buses. So there may not be full bus routes. And, you know, there may not, I mean, that's a question. Will drivers want to be driving? So many staffing issues and so many schools that are basically trying to accommodate, you know, two or three different models of learning because of the needs of the families and their staff. And I mean, Secretary French, that seems almost impossible to accomplish.
Yeah, it's I'll say it's imperfect. But, you know, this is an emergency and it's unprecedented, and we don't have any roadmap to follow. So I think, you know, we have to feel, on the other hand, confident that we can work through these problems at the local level. And, you know, it's heartening to hear, you know, parents coming together on Facebook to support one another. And I think, you know, that's how we've been successful in responding to this emergency today, and how we'll handle fall as well. I think, you know, there's everyone's focused on doing what's best for kids and making sure our schools are safe for both staff and students.
I want to come back, though, to that, because that's what we were addressing at the beginning of the show when we had a technological glitch with your line. But that question of educational parity, and there are parents who are banding together on Facebook to say, let's come up with a plan so that, you know, we can keep our jobs while also keeping our children educated. So on those three remote days, they're sharing resources, or in some cases, hiring a child care provider or hiring a tutor or even a teacher who can teach their children. Not everybody is going to be able to do that. And so that question of parity and educational attainment and fairness for Vermont kids comes to me again, that I'm not sure that can happen under these plans with, you know, with any plan, even if it were a statewide plan, but with the really varied resources and abilities of parents and families to be able to support their children through these models. I'm worried about this, as I'm sure you are, but, you know, what does the AOE do about it?
Yeah, it's one of the biggest concerns we have, frankly, and we struggled a bit, you know, before promulgating the hybrid learning model. We knew in some cases it would exacerbate these what have been persistent patterns of inequity in our state. So, you know, a couple things from the state level in terms of, you know, remote learning in particular. You know, I think our experience in the spring, much to the credit of Vermont teachers, was imperfect. You know, we did our best. It was an emergency. You know, we reacted and stood it up as quickly as possible. We've learned a lot about how to do that better. We have better infrastructure at the state level. So we've, you know, at the state level, we've expanded access for learning management systems. So, you know, those resources are more readily available. So I think, you know, firstly, we have to have a commitment to ensuring that all students have access to high quality instructional materials and high quality instruction. And I think the state's put some infrastructure in place in the last couple of months that will help in that regard. But these patterns of inequity are ones we should be very focused on during this emergency response. And as I mentioned earlier, I think one of the things we will do is to start collecting data, firstly on the experience, because I think it's important to acknowledge, as much as we're all anxious about the fall, just the fact that we're reopening schools and getting those routines reestablished. Really, the priority should be on returning students to some semblance of normalcy, getting those social emotional supports in place, of which schools, do so much, not just academically, but also by providing those other activities. So I think going into the fall, we really, I think, want to put some emphasis on just reopening schools and not so much coming in hot and heavy immediately to assess academic growth or loss. But really, job number one is just to reopen schools smoothly and ensure the resurrection of some of those routines that provide such stability to our students and our communities.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that with yet another superintendent. Brooke Olson-Farrell is superintendent of Slate Valley School District, which includes the towns of Benson, Hubbardton, Castleton, Fairhaven, West Haven, and Orwell. Brooke, thanks for talking with us.
Great to be here.
We actually got an email from a family in your district. Tisa writes in to say, we have a child in the Slate Valley District. We're praying the in-person plan works because the emergency virtual learning put in place in March was a nightmare. There are real concerns for families whose kids have special needs, though. So how are you addressing the needs of families like Tisa's and all the families in your districts? As you know, as we've talked with all these superintendents who are, this is a concern for everybody, obviously. How are you trying to work through it?
Absolutely. It's a huge concern. And as such, we've decided to move to a pre-K through 8 in-person model 5 days a week and a hybrid model for grades 9 through 12. We really want to make sure that we're able to address especially the social emotional needs of our students. And the best way to do that is to do that in person. Also, it's really hard to educate students with disabilities in a remote environment. And so we believe it's extremely beneficial for them to be back in school in person.
What about aftercare? So many families rely on school and then school-based aftercare in order to keep their jobs. Many parents are working from home, but that doesn't mean they can accommodate remote learning for their children while also doing their jobs. Is there any way Slate Valley is trying to address that?
So we are still planning on running our typical aftercare programs in our buildings. So we will have childcare in most of our buildings until 5:30 each day. And because we have the 5 day a week model, we have shortened the student day by about an hour and 15 minutes to allow for staggered arrival and dismissal.
Brooke, what do you need from the state, from the Agency of Education moving forward?
I think it would be wonderful if there was a plan, either all schools are going to open remotely or all schools are going to open in person. And I understand the issue of local control, but it makes the staffing dynamic and the childcare dynamic really hard to implement or to address really on the local level.
Well, I appreciate you giving us just the briefest overview of what's happening in your district. And as with everybody, wish you the best of luck for the fall.
Thank you.
Brooke Olson-Farrell is superintendent of Slate Valley School District. So, Secretary French, last thought to you. You've heard these different approaches, different needs, and obviously, everybody in every school district has needs that are personal and then needs that are community-based needs. But I'm also curious if there's a chance and whether AOE knows whether you're going to push back the start of schools. Lots of districts planning to open a little bit late already on August 31st. Is there a chance, as we've been hearing rumors of, that may be pushed back later into September?
Yeah, it's something we have been looking at quite actively for a while, even at the end of the legislative session. I think the issue of calendar and use of time is one we want to have a statewide conversation on, but specifically around Labor Day, I think there is some interest in that conversation. And last week I polled the various education associations for their feedback on that. It was sort of a mixed response, but I think folks could acknowledge that everyone would benefit from a little more time to prepare.
So you think yes, probably not starting till September 8th? I mean, is there a, there's no decision yet, but what should people plan for?
Well, there's no decision yet. I think, you know, the other thing I'd say is that if we are going to make a decision, it would be very, very soon. I think the utility of that decision loses some of its impact after August 1st. So it's something we're actively looking at, and we'll decide on that shortly.
Good. Well, August 1st coming right up. We're almost there. Dan French is Secretary of Vermont's Agency of Education. I appreciate you taking the hour to talk with us.
Thank you.
Teachers, let us know who you think we should be talking to and what our focus should be for a teacher roundtable discussion in the next couple of weeks. And parents and caregivers, we obviously want to hear from you as well and how you're trying to navigate and manage. I will say I am in full freak out mode. So I join you in that if that's where you are. Write to Vermont Edition at vpr.org.